You might have seen the headlines recently about the shenanigans in federal parliament. You thought Australian political discourse had reached a new low, then someone smeared blood on a door, etc. But how easy is it to be a leader in a high-stress environment? And are we the people clear about what we really want from our leaders? Today on Life Matters, we're asking what makes a good leader. And we'd love to hear your views on this. When you think of the leaders in your life, what's made them great leaders in your eyes? And how has their leadership inspired you? You can get in touch with us on our Facebook page or email lifematters@abc.net.au. Sean Carney was a political journalist for 40 years, so he thought he'd learned a bit about leadership, the good and the bad. But after speaking with more than two dozen Australians about their role as leaders in different fields, he realised there was more to it than he'd first thought. Sean's with us now. Welcome.
Hi, Hildary.
Now, I wanted to ask what ideas you had about leadership going into writing the book.
I suppose I just looked at it through the prism of politics, and that, and to a degree that is how we view leadership in our society. I think we tend to have a very narrow idea of it, that you have an inspiring leader or an uninspiring leader at a political level, and there's someone you believe in, and we have a more presidential type of politics now than we've had over the years gone by. But I thought it was just really going out there, saying what you believe, standing up for it, and taking the slings and arrows. But it's much, much deeper, wider, broader than I'd really thought about until I started to do those interviews for this book.
And if you'd taken the template of the average politician, it would have been a middle-aged white male. And you've obviously gone really outside the box there with these people. They're really diverse. They're from different fields. There's lots of women in there as well. How did things change as you started to talk to people? What did you start to think of as the qualities of a good leader?
Well, for one thing, out of the 25 that are in the book, 13 are women. So, which was, I think, just, and that just came about. It wasn't really a determined formula that we had, but that was a reflective of what's happening with leadership and what's going on in our society, thankfully. But I think really what I found was the diversity of styles of leadership and how often counterintuitive leadership can be. I spoke to a very, very tough homicide detective in New South Wales, Gary Jubelin, who's done some very high-profile cases, leads a strike force and is quite well known. And a tough guy, but he talked about the need to have empathy. He nominated that as the first thing you have to have. Now, you might have thought that someone in his game might not nominate that as being the one thing you need if you're going to be a leader, but that was what he came up with. And also people in the community sector came and said you had to be hard-nosed with what you do. So it wasn't just that. It was that, you know, leadership can be lateral as well. It's not just being in charge, you know, telling people what to do. It's much more than there's a sense of helping other people, which is a form of leadership as well.
I love the interview with Ronnie Khan from OzHarvest, yes, who sounds like she has a velvet steamroller approach to leadership. It was great.
Absolutely.
One of the other people who agreed to be interviewed for Sean's book, The Changemakers, was Helen Zoki, Chief Executive of Oxfam Australia. Helen, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Now, your stories are very, very busy and very powerful. Five different schools by year 11, five different parents all up. Could you tell us a little bit about how you feel your childhood shaped your approach to life?
Well, I certainly got used to dealing with change from a very early age, but that change was shepherded by an older sister, and there are a number of women who have been really significant in my life, and I always say it's her. We're very different, not physically. Our mannerisms are horrifyingly similar, but perhaps our outlook on life is very different. But that change was helped by having someone who was a bit of a pathfinder, and perhaps that was one of the early lessons that I learnt around leadership.
I found it really interesting that in interviews you've said, well, you know, I've had these great mentors and Yvonne was always there for me and my partner's been a great support, and Yvonne just went, no, it's because she gives 110%.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this is something that women do in their approach to leadership. They tend to acknowledge the behind-the-scenes activity, whereas men often say, well, I do this thing, that's great.
Well, that might be the case, I think. I think I'm pretty clear about what my contribution is, but I have had some lovely moments, and I think there is that that it's important that there are people who you can trust unconditionally. And I think we're fortunate if we have one or two of those relationships in my life, and I've certainly had those.
We want to hear about the leaders in your community too. What has made them great leaders in your eyes, and how has their leadership inspired you? They definitely do not need to be politicians. We can find leaders wherever we look around us. Or maybe you're in a position of leadership yourself. What have you learnt about how to be a good leader, and what have you learnt about yourself? Head to our Facebook page or email lifematters@abc.net.au. Helen Zoki, I'm wondering if your experience in leadership roles in different areas has given you any thoughts about whether you can make a leader out of anyone or whether it's something in people's makeup?
I think leadership does have a component of being driven or having a sense of ambition about where you want to go. And I don't mean in a monetary sense. It might be ambition about what you want to change, ambition about what you want to contribute. And so to that extent, there has to be enough of a kind of energy and sense of purpose to pursue it. But I think Sean's comments at the start are really critical, that leadership isn't it's not a cookie cutter. It's you have to be the leader that is who you are, and that's really important. And that then means, you know, what's a contribution that you can make, that you want to make, that you really want to put your energy into, and then how do you do that? And that really means that, I guess, yes, anyone who wants to be a leader can, but they've got to be true to themselves in that process.
And Sean, do you need different qualities in, say, a community organisation or a large health organisation or a large business than you do in federal politics?
I think you do. I think you do. The commonalities are that you've got to sort of be willing to do the hard things. I know, speaking to Helen, you know, I was really fascinated to hear how she spoke about restructuring Oxfam and having to take people through a process, you know, and explaining. But it's about being accountable. It's being explaining what it is that you want to do. And you mentioned Ronnie Khan before. Ronnie, when she set up her food rescue service, OzHarvest, she knew right from the start the positions had to be paid positions, not volunteers, because volunteers can, say, call in sick, people who are working. You just had to have that sort of commitment. So I think the difference with politics, I suppose, is that you're operating to two audiences. You're operating to your own people who are, you know, your party, and you're not so much your party membership as much as your party MPs, but you also have this other audience, which in many, especially nowadays, is very much an audience, sort of either applauding or throwing vegetables at you, pretty much. So it's very difficult. Now, I think that's where political leaderships can falter now, because you it's very, very difficult to please two audiences at the same time, at any time. But now in the age of social media, it's even harder, I think.
Well, and if we take the Ronnie Khan example, I love the story she told about going into meetings and just assuming that she would be listened to and have the suggestions taken up, which is, I think, maybe in federal politics, you might have to have a different view to at least appearing to listen and take views on board. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, Sean? Well, that's the case. I mean, not so long ago, Chris Bowen, the Shadow Treasurer, made the rather obvious point that if people didn't like his policy, they could vote against the Labor Party, and this is continually brought up as him being arrogant, taking the election outcome for granted, when didn't seem all that remarkable to me. But that's the sensitivity. They're the sensitivities that sit around politics, for sure.
Helen, what do you think other people want from a leader in your experience?
I think it's pretty simple, and how you get there might be different. So the first thing they want is a clear sense of what your contribution is going to be to whatever the organisation is. And then they want some transparency about how you're going to get there. And I think that's increasingly the case. I feel that really acutely at the moment, where we're in a sector that is, you know, pretty much disrupted in terms of financial challenges and really having to sort out a change of direction. And people can deal with anything except for uncertainty. So if they have certainty, then they can make a decision about whether this is the path or the plot or the leader that they want to be with. So I think those characteristics are the ones that are really important in any leader. And then how you do that depends on the context. And I think the stories in the Changemakers book show that there are different ways to getting to that plot. And I think the politician question is really interesting, because I had one stint as a local councillor back in last century and when I was very young, and I actually decided that political life was not for me. That's not what I wanted to do. And I'm really pleased that we've got this MacKinnon Prize now, which is the second year of an annual prize which acknowledges political leadership, because it's a hard gig. You know, it is the hardest gig, I think, in terms of leadership, for the reasons, the multiple audiences, the constant pressure. And we need to find some ways of acknowledging who are the good political leaders, because goodness knows, you look at the world and you think we need those.
I found it really interesting that the MacKinnon Prize, which was the spark for this book, aims to encourage courageous and visionary leadership. But, you know, as we've learnt from Sir Humphrey Appleby in Yes Minister, one person's courageous and visionary might be another person's terrifying and risky. How long does it take to work out whether something has been courageous and visionary?
Well, I suppose we're testing that at the moment, aren't we, with, you know, essentially what's happened in national politics in Australia was in 1993, John Hewson and the Liberal Party came up with an entire kind of program of taxes and industrial relations system, all sorts of things, and it was regarded as the longest suicide note in history when they lost the election. And the Labor Party's written a rather shorter version of that sort of note, so that's being tested. So we'll see. But what the reason I raised the Hewson example is because an entire generation of politicians took a lesson that you should be risk averse. Labor is trying it on again, not to be quite so risk averse. One of the interesting things I found in talking to so many people was that they all said, you need to take risks. All of the people that I interviewed said, you must take risks and be willing to suffer loss and own those losses and learn from them.
And we'll talk a little more in a moment about failure and how to deal with that. But we're getting some text messages. Margaret in Hobart writes, a leader is someone who can make a decision. And Margaret, yes, I remember speaking to a manager who said to me, the important thing is just to be seen to make a decision. You can work out later if it's the right one, just make it. Interesting. Peter in Epping has sent a text. Leadership is explaining to a population about the direction we need to go and why we need to go there. It's about bringing as many people with you as possible. This involves a consultative and empathetic style. And someone else writes, good leadership is good leadership, male or female. There is no difference. You can get in touch with us on Facebook or email lifematters@abc.net.au. We're chatting with Helen Soke from Oxfam Australia and Sean Carney, who's written the book The Changemakers, interviewed 25 prominent Australians in varying fields. Now, Sean, you mentioned Gary Jubelin before, the homicide detective in New South Wales. Let's return briefly to that idea of emotion. How much emotion is useful for good leadership? I guess the difference between being, you know, cold and focused, but also having that human element.
Yes, Gary has put a lot of thought and experience into this, and his view was you must, of course, what's driving you is empathy to solve a crime and bring someone to account for doing it. So you must care, but limit it, control it, don't succumb to it. Understand that there's a job to do and emotion is the driver, but it's not the job. You know, he said he's seen people succumb to the emotion rather than to the notion of actually keeping it in check.
He told a really powerful story about interviewing the husband of a missing woman.
Yes, a woman had been killed. Some of the evidence or the circumstances, anyway, pointed to the husband. He went in and, in his words, I think, it was a very tough interview, which, having met him, I can't begin to imagine how tough it was. Very, very hard. Tried to, you know, really gave it to the guy. And it turned out that they got the person who had actually committed the crime. And when Gary spoke to the husband, he said, look, you know, I know I was pretty hard on you in that interview. And he said, Gary, don't worry about it. when you did that, I knew I had the right guy doing that case because I knew I didn't do it. And if there was ever anyone who was committed to getting this thing sorted out, it was going to be you, which was a great relief to him.
It was fascinating too how sometimes he used emotion within his team. He would bring the families of the missing or dead in to say, this is why we need to find this person. And that really struck a chord with me.
Yes.
Helen Zoki, we touched before on the fact that you've had to make some very difficult decisions about restructuring in tight financial environments. What kind of impact does that have on you as a leader? Because when the buck stops with you and you know you're having real impacts on people's lives, I guess it's hard to just let it go at the end of the day.
Sure, but I think the one important thing that we always have to remember is at the heart of any leadership journey, whether it's the example we've just heard, whether it's a politician, is that there are people involved, and there are people involved who have jobs with organisations. There are people involved in communities that, in our case, that we work with, and it's really just trying to keep an eye to what the purpose of this is. So in our case, our ambition is to make sure that we can divert as much of our resource that we raise in Australia to go to programs for people living in poverty. So if you're clear about that purpose, then other things make sense around that. And that's the ambition that we've set ourselves. So Oxfam's got an incredible legacy globally. We have relationships with communities that go through decades. We've been very brave and bold in the past. So as we go through challenging times here in Australia, we want to make sure that we can continue to resource and support those communities in the work that we're doing with them.
And earlier, Helen, you talked about being put off politics by having a stint in local government. Well, Linda's called in from Sydney with a completely different trajectory. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How did you get into your leadership role?
Well, I was a primary school teacher, and I went along to a meeting at my local association with politicians. And John Kaye afterwards asked me to join the Greens education group. And I said, I'm not a Green. And he said, that's all right, you're an on-the-ground teacher. I worked with him and Lee Rhiannon on education policy. And eventually I decided this was the party for me. It was a party where people would listen to me. They were wonderful listeners, and they involved people in developing policy. And Lee especially has had so much mud thrown at her over the years, and yet she still has got her eye on the goal. And the goal is always, their goals have always been ones I can agree with. And I've just been inspired by them. They are we politicians, not me politicians.
And Linda, it sounds like it's a real combination for you of the personally inspiring and the broader political message that you're aligned with.
Yes, I've been inspired by the way they work. Whenever I do something, I would think, how would Lee do it? How would John do it? And John, I think, John Kaye, I mean, everybody in the state parliament admired him and gave wonderful eulogies when he unfortunately died a few years ago. And I think that's because they listened to people. They respected people, even if they had differences. And they worked towards achieving something for everyone.
Linda, thanks so much for your call. Tracy's in Hurstville. Tracy, you've got some very clear qualities in mind that you think make for a good leadership.
Yes, I've worked in an organisation for coming up to 13 years now, and the director of our clinic, it's actually a psychology clinic, she has managed to, I get a bit emotional thinking about it, nurture this team and create this kind of very safe working environment, and really her key quality is compassion. But also a clear sense of what she hopes for the organisation as well as the individuals, you know, working really collaboratively to build a sense of what each person is looking for in their career.
And yeah. Tracy, what happens, I guess, when the vision for the broader organisation might come into conflict with what's best for one individual?
Well, look, she's built this kind of business model where she's she's kind of built compassion into her business model because she's allowed for space for there to be so much flexibility that people have come and gone and people have been on maternity leave, people have come back on really flexible arrangements. She's actually built it into her business model. So I'm not exactly sure how she's done that, but she's managed to do that. And it means that people sort of might go off to other, you know, research positions or other sorts of positions, and then they always seem to find their way back.
And so, she's obviously left a huge impact on you, Tracy. Thanks for sharing that with us today.
You're welcome.
That's really interesting, Helen, to hear that you can build compassion into a business model. Has there been pushback in some areas when you're CEO of Oxfam for Australia when you try and showcase that model?
Well, I think in the for-purpose sector like we're in, people come to work for organisations because they're very values-driven. And one of the things, it's interesting that observation, that one of the things that you can do is give flexibility and to acknowledge that not only is there alignment in terms of the values that people bring to organisations, but we can make it easier for them to actually contribute. And I think that's increasingly something that we have to see in workplaces, that in such a connected world, people can work anywhere and make a contribution. And it was terrific to hear that flexibility being aligned with compassion, but actually it's about creating the best possible opportunity for people to contribute. And that's something that we certainly can offer staff. We can't offer stellar salaries. We're not in that sector.
I'm stunned.
But we can, yes, but we can offer a terrific reason to be going to work every day and some flexibility around how that's actually enacted.
We're chatting with Helen Zocchi, who's the Chief Executive of Oxfam Australia, and Sean Carney, journalist and author of The Changemakers, 25 Leaders in Their Own Words. And perhaps you've got some words you'd like to say about a leader in your community. What makes them a good leader and how have they inspired you? Or perhaps you're in a position of leadership yourself. And what are you learning about how to be a good leader and what people actually want from you? You can get in touch with us via Facebook or email lifematters@abc.net.au. And Barbara has been a CEO and has some thoughts to share with us from Canberra. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you, Amanda?
Well, thank you. I'm Hilary. What have you learnt in your time?
I agree with many of the comments about making decisions, taking risks, having the passion to want to make change. But the realisation I've come to more recently, because I am now in a position where I'm coaching younger leaders, and particularly young women, is that good leaders are prepared to expose their vulnerabilities. Because I think, particularly amongst young women, we see them comparing themselves to other people and saying, oh, I can't do that, or they're so confident, I'm not, you know, in that position. And when they hear leaders say, you know, I was really nervous, or I made huge mistakes, or I didn't always, you know what I was doing, it creates a connection. And as people kept saying to me, it makes leaders human. I recently wrote a blog on my website about it, about my own experience of feeling that kind of self-doubt and, you know, being prepared to ask questions and things. And I had a huge response from people saying, yes, if only, you know, more people talked about this, we would have better leaders and more human leaders, I think.
It does seem to be a pressure when you're in a leadership role to just be appearing to be completely fine with everything all the time and completely in control.
And I think that creates distance from your team. What I learned is what your team want is to be inspired and empowered and to feel they can be the best they can be under, you know, with your leadership. And in order to do that, they need to feel that connection with you. But if they see you as someone who's always in control and always on top of things, it doesn't create the space for taking risks and making mistakes.
Barbara, that's a really interesting perspective. Thank you for that. Sean Carney, we've heard some interesting ideas about failure. What is the best way to, as you said, own your mistakes and move on and bring the team with you?
I think one of the big disconnects in terms of the view of political leaders is that It's the common view is you can't ever admit to making a mistake, which means that probably half the people are going to think you're treating them like a mug, right? Because you can see that it was a mistake. So there's this unwillingness to ever admit flaws, which is a real problem. Failure is something I think in the real world everybody understands, and I agree with the caller that you know, there's a desire for connection and a sort of upward empathy, if you like, for people who have a leader, to think, oh yeah, this person is like me. One of the people I interviewed was Barb DeCourty, a businesswoman who runs an operation where she sells cleaning products, and her business grew very, very quickly, and so quickly that it pretty much fell over, and she pretty much also had a breakdown along with it. Her life kind of fell apart to a degree, and she didn't quite say it was the best thing that happened to her, but she said she got herself together and learnt so much from that, and made a point now of saying to the people who work for and with her, you know, I've already failed 5 times, you know, by lunchtime most days, right? Own your failures, because everybody fails, everybody makes mistakes, so it's okay, it's what you do afterwards, you know, it's like the old ice skater, when you fall, how do you get up, you know? And I think that's a very, very important thing in leadership, I think.
Our last caller for today will be Ramesh in Melbourne. Ramesh, what are your thoughts about good leadership?
Good leadership, you have to be a good human being to be a good leader to start with. And in my area of work, you have to have regard for human rights and equality. And particularly, you know, you've got to be transparent and accountable as well. You're only as good as your followers are. And my style of leadership has been participatory and democratic. You've got to believe when you're leading people, you need to have a vision, and you'll have to explain and show that vision to people you're following. And the last point I want to make is that as a leader, you know, you have to identify other leaders in your team, and you have to grow them as well, because it's not you are not the only person who has the potential. Maybe you are privileged, you got that position, but there are so many others that you can help lead. So being a mentor and helping others to become leaders is very important.
Ramesh, thank you. Succession planning is a key plank of leadership. I like it. Helen Soki, I want to finish up with a question about how you've what you've learned about yourself, because it must be a journey of the self as well as a journey of the organisation being in such a key role.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think that certainly with each experience, you get more comfortable with who you are and what you can offer. And that's been the wonderful thing about having Oxfam at this stage of my career. I felt that all of the other things that had happened in my life culminated in this opportunity where I could bring my best game to play for an organisation that's such an incredible organisation. But I think Ramesh's points are also really relevant. That's done because there are other people with different skills and different capabilities, and you have to recognise where your strengths are, but where also what your weaknesses are. And I probably had that insight all along, but that's very much come into focus about being clear about getting onto that early and bringing those people into play in whatever the situation is that you're dealing with. So that's been a really it's been a terrific kind of journey in a way.
And Sean, I imagine you've been on a journey too.
What's very much.
The key thing you learnt from writing this book?
I think I learnt that there are so many leaders in our community who are completely unheralded, from the person who does the organising in the sort of book group about what books you're going to read and whose house you're going to read it in, to people who will do the hard things for the sporting organisation or the community organisation. They're all leaders, you know, and it means they've all got stories to tell, tens and tens of thousands of them all around us who make the society work. And that was really one of the ideas behind the book, was to try to show politicians that there are things they might be able to learn. It's not just about them, it's about all forms of leadership that they can apply to what they do.
So we'll see a copy of The Changemakers on every table in Parliament soon.
Oh, I'm sure they're reading it right now.
Thank you so much, both of you, for coming in today.
Thank you, Hilary.
Sean Carney is the author of The Changemakers, 25 Leaders in Their Own Words. And Helen Zoki is the Chief Executive of Oxfam Australia and one of the people who appears in the book. I'm Hilary Harper. You're listening to Life Matters here on RN.